everyone. Welcome to the 311th episode of the Internet of Things podcast. This is your host, Stacey Higginbotham, and your co-host,
Kevin Toefel.
And we have a great show for you today. We're going to be starting off with security breaches, that is. Hackers getting into security cameras. We've got a new security camera from Abode. Plus, we're going to talk about how to shut stalkers out of your tech. The Amazon crew is developing a Madam A on wheels. We'll talk about that. The LF Edge has a new report on the state of edge computing. Raspberry Pi, we've talked about their custom chip that they did for a microcontroller a couple weeks back. Sounds like they're going to launch something else to use that chip for tiny machine learning. Honeywell has made an acquisition in in-building tech. And we've got new products and services coming from Best Buy, Sonos, and Airthings. Kevin also reviewed the Logitech Circle View doorbell, and we'll hear what he thinks about that. And our guest this week is Julie Setzer, who is VP of R&D at P&G Ventures. She is going to talk to us about how Procter & Gamble is thinking about integrating technology into products and how they plan to work with startups to bring those to their portfolio. So much good stuff this week. Let's kick it off first with a message from our sponsor. This week's sponsor is Smart Charging Technologies, the developer of Switch Always On. It is a smart IoT DC micro UPS designed to improve the power, reliability, and connectivity of all your networking devices. You can learn about the limitations of existing power solutions and how you can build resiliency in your IoT applications by reading their white paper. Just go to stacyonIoT.com/power to download the report. Okay, Kevin. Man, we are both excited today. It's going to be a good day. It's a sunny day in both of our areas, which I feel like it's rare for March, right?
Yes, and it's actually warm here in Pennsylvania. We're hitting well above 60 today, which it's really been like 20s and 30s for quite a while now.
Yikes. It is not warm.
Yeah.
So enough talk about the weather. Let's talk about security. Specifically, let's talk about a group of hackers that broke into...
A lot of places.
Yeah, a lot of places. Well, technically, they broke into one place, a security camera vendor called Verkada Inc., and Verkada sells their security cameras and software to a lot of places, including Tesla, Cloudflare, many hospitals and healthcare places, many jails, many places. So this
schools
hacker,
too.
Oh, schools, yeah. So this hacking collective, this was a political act for them. This was a, hey, let's show everybody how surveilled they are at all times. And I don't know.
I mean, it's bad because they actually got root access and could do anything they wanted with the cameras and the system. So they could pan and tilt. They could use software to analyze faces. And so, I mean, this is really bad. Really bad.
What's even worse is they got this because they had found the password and details for a super admin account. So think of that as like a Godview account.
Super root.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Do you not have multi-factor authentication on all of those accounts? Because you should. Like, A. So what? Right?
Yeah. I've been out of the enterprise IT industry for a while now, so I don't know how prevalent it is to have two-factor authentication for those kinds of things.
You should. I mean,
I don't disagree. Oh, no, no.
I had a little RSA dongle to get into my email when I was at Time.
Same. I have a Google Titan security key for all of my Google accounts, Chromebooks, et cetera. Absolutely. Yeah, but, you know, what should be done and what is done in reality are two different things, unfortunately.
Well, okay. I felt like this was a hack that should never have happened. And I imagine if you were a customer of theirs, you probably are thinking the same thing.
Yes. Yes. The people were originally saying that the Tesla factory was being looked in upon through this hack, but Tesla says no, it's actually one of our suppliers. So I actually would have watched the Teslas being built personally, but
that's true. I mean, so here's the next part. I feel like their political leanings here were a little misguided because a lot of these are actually private employers in jails. So like when I look at some of these places, I'm like, it makes sense that there's a security camera in these locations, even though people are surveilled all the time. I mean, and you usually know. In a hospital room, it's a little different, but I will say that I know in emergency room settings, they want cameras because they want security available in case you get a patient coming in who's mentally unstable or upset and the nurse can't handle them. So they do actually use security. And those aren't security facilities that should be accessible over the web. You know, they're not designed to be viewed over the web, although in this case, they were.
No, they should be, you know, on an intranet perhaps, but not the internet.
Yeah. So all of this, I mean, although I will say we're going to see more and more going over the internet because there's a big rush to do kind of remote monitoring from a centralized location. And we're seeing that in manufacturing. We're seeing that in healthcare, where you have like in rural areas, you have an ER doctor in like a city who helps monitor patients in rural areas via cameras. So I get that, like, hey, we're all under surveillance. That sucks. Let's show everyone. This is kind of like a teenage boy prank is kind of what it feels like in the sense like, yeah, we did it to show everybody that you're never secure. I don't know. It was frustrating. And
I pretty much presume I'm never secure these days. I think I mentioned that a few weeks ago, walking around the neighborhood, you know, if people have video doorbells and such, I don't act any differently, but it's to the point now where I feel like I'm always on camera.
Somebody's watching you. Okay. Oh, it's a red letter day. I'm singing. All right. Speaking of security cameras, let's talk about Abode. We actually had their CEO on, I think 2 weeks ago. They are launching their own cheap camera.
Yeah. When I first saw it, I'm like, oh, Abode Cam 2, you know, but at Wyze Cam prices. Pre-order specials are $29.99.
Yes. And this is it's a small camera. It has 24/7 video recording. This doesn't require a gateway. You can put it like camera only or as part of the Abode thing, Abode solution. You have a standard or pro plan if you want to record to the cloud. And
indoor, outdoor, and color night vision, very similar to the slightly less expensive Wyze Cam 3.
Yes. So basically, very exciting, cheap camera. If you don't get it on special, it's going to be $34.99. Still super cheap. So
yeah, one thing, there's no battery.
Oh.
Yeah, I always get hung up on these outdoor cameras that I have to like run a wire.
Yeah, okay. So does the Wyze Cam have a battery?
No, it does not. It comes with a power adapter, and you can buy an outdoor power adapter separately, and it comes with a 6-foot USB cable. So that's kind of a hang-up for me on these outdoor cameras, personally.
Yeah, well, batteries are expensive, and they're only getting more so. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about security, surveillance, exciting things. Consumer Reports, just go them. They did a story this week that I'd like to draw everybody's attention to. It is on how to shut stalkers out of your tech. And this is for people facing domestic abuse. And this is a big topic.
It's an important topic.
This is a big topic. We always assume that, you know, home is a safe place because for most of us or many of us, it probably is, especially for people building these devices. And at the National Network to End Domestic Violence, they want to remind us that, hey, that's not true for everybody. And so this article, we'll just talk about a few things, but you basically, the first step should be changing your passwords, not sharing those with your abuser, and reviewing the privacy settings on your accounts. People can get information through shared calendar apps, through shared, you know, access to a digital assistant, lots of things.
So even if you're sharing passwords, which you may not even know that you're sharing an account or something, setting up two-factor authentication is recommended. That's something we always recommend for everybody.
Yes. And for you, it's probably even more important simply because, and for that, in an abuse situation, if they have access to your phone, you don't want to do it via SMS. You want to do it through probably a hard key, like a Titan security key, and then keep that as secure as possible. Oh, it's very hard. I mean, I don't know. And if you can, set up MFA and change the settings on your physical devices. And I would say for all of our readers or listeners, All of y'all out there who are tech savvy, a lot of this probably feels very common sense, but reach out to people in your life. I think it's important to talk about this widely with your friends, just in case they're unaware and, you know, maybe you can help people. Anyway, that's Stacy's, please, let's help people. Okay, now let's talk about Madam A on Wheels. Kevin?
Yes. So back when I thought Amazon's Echo was the shizzle and I was using it all the time, this goes back several years, I said, oh, I really want Madam A all around my house, like, but not speakers all over. I wanted basically something to follow me around or be available that was mobile. And sure enough, and I know there's been reported before that Amazon was working on a mobile version of its digital assistant, but recently, it was reported that they now have 800 or more employees working on what they're calling the Vesta home robot. Apparently, from reports, we don't know anything official, we'll have several cameras, a display, and will be the size of two small cats, which I just happen to have two small cats, so I know how big that is. We'll roll around on your home, and basically, we'll have Madam A. I don't know if we're talking about like robotic arms to do things for you. I doubt it. I just think it's a mobile version of their digital assistant, which who knows if we'll even see it as a product. Maybe it'll be one of those things like the cuckoo clock or the note-taking.
The printer note thingy is totally, yes. That's funded.
Yes.
So I have a question about the two small cats. Do you think these are two small cats stacked on top of each other or side by side?
I think they're tied together like in a three-legged race.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
All right. I look forward to that. Not tying cat's legs together. I do not.
It would actually be six-legged race in that particular instance, but yes.
Okay. Let's talk about trends at the edge and trends in edge computing. So State of the Edge, this is a Linux Foundation, part of the LF Edge organization, so many organizations here. They have launched their fourth annual State of the Edge 2021 report. Basically, what they've found is edge infrastructure is accelerating. The demand for that is accelerating because of COVID. People are digitizing their enterprise and manufacturing operations so fast. And basically, they're estimating that between 2019 and 2028, cumulative capital expenditure of $800 billion will be spent on new and replacement IT server and edge computing facilities. That is a lot of money. And most of that is going to be at like little micro data centers, not necessarily like inside corporate facilities, is their thought. Healthcare is going to be a big driver here because more people are going to be looking for remote healthcare. And manufacturing is going to be another big driver, because people are really focusing on remote access. We talked about it earlier with this idea that you have one expert in a centralized facility monitoring several other facilities. Yeah. So that's the data. I'm going to provide a link to the actual report that will give you way more details if you're excited about it. We'll talk about things like, oh, 5G and new types of interconnection facilities. But most of y'all are probably like, oh, okay, edge is big. Move on. So we will. Next up, Evan Upton, who is the chairman of the Raspberry Pi Foundation and just an all-around great guy. He has hinted at a possible second in-house silicon design to come from their ASICs team. So they actually just designed and launched on the Raspberry Pi Pico the RP2040 microcontroller. So that was their first ASIC. And that is, you know, a tiny customized chip. And we were all excited about that. We talked about that a couple episodes ago. But now it sounds like they might be developing a second ASIC for Edge AI and Tiny ML. So the RP2040, if you remember, was all about flexibility. This one will be all about Tiny ML. Also, if you're excited about Tiny ML, which is machine learning on microcontrollers, not machine learning on cell phones or other big chips, but tiny chips, you should check out the Tiny ML Summit that is coming later this month. I'm really excited about it. Okay, go on, Kevin.
I may check that out because what this does, if assuming this is their next step, I mean, that Raspberry Pi Pico board is $4. This is a way to get low power, low compute, but still capable ML learning in the hands of many, many more people, like mere mortals like me. Sure, I could go use a cloud service and train models and so on, but you know, that's takes some technical know-how, takes a lot more money than $4. This would be interesting for the general populace, I think.
Yes. And interesting for not just makers, but although it does bring the concept of TinyML to more people and helps drive application developers and like the infrastructure associated with it to more people, which then lets you do cool things like, you know, you could build your own AI that doesn't connect to the internet, right? So you could build like a device that when you knock on your desk, it turns on your lights or something, and you could train it what a knock sounds like. Or if you don't want to do a knock, you could train it what snapping your finger sounds like. I don't know. So these are really exciting. I'm excited. Okay.
Yeah.
And next up, Honeywell will acquire a majority stake in Fiplex, I don't know, it's F-I-P-L-E-X, to expand its public safety in-building wireless communications efforts. And I think this is really good. Honeywell has been, actually everyone, has been very focused on smart buildings tied to lighting, tied to occupancy sensing, tied to HVAC. This deal is tied to public safety. And what it's covering is Fiplex makes in-building communication systems that help provide radio coverage for public safety and first responders, and also the people in the building. So it's basically another radio layer for people to use in case of an emergency or just for sharing information around the building. So I
definitely see the opportunity here. And I think back to seeing early demos of firefighters wearing like VR type or AR goggles and the initial testing of seeing heat patterns and people's outlines and whatnot through the camera sensors was hampered by, at the time, cellular capability and poor signal strength and so on. And I'm not saying this is what they're going to do by any means. I'm saying these are the kinds of opportunities that explain why it makes sense for Honeywell to look into this.
Yes, because if you think about commercial buildings, you know, anybody who's worked in a like a really tall office probably is familiar with the fact that your cell phone doesn't always get great reception, like near the elevator banks. And what it is these are giant concrete and glass and metal structures, and it's hard to push signals all the way through them and have good coverage all the way through them. That's why enterprise Wi-Fi was such a big deal 2 decades ago. So this is the same thing, only allowing public safety people in. So it's a good deal. It makes sense for Honeywell. They have tons of in-building, and they do tons with fire suppression and control, lots of public safety, lots of building safety systems. So this is a lovely add-on that just helps modernize their infrastructure. All right, let's talk about new products and services. First up, Best Buy.
Yeah, this one kind of took me by surprise. And at first, I also thought it was kind of lame. But after digging in a little bit more, it's not so lame.
It's less lame?
It's less lame than I originally thought. Best Buy Health is offering a new service that they have partnered with Lively. Lively offers health and safety services, actual call center reps for emergencies and things. It's basically like a monitoring type system that they offer. Through Lively, Best Buy is giving people up to $200 off the purchase of an Apple Watch Series 6 or $150 off a new Apple Watch SE, provided you agree to a 2-year preferred health and safety contract. And what that does is it adds services through Lively with your Apple Watch, so that if you fall down, your watch can basically ping the Lively folks and they can reach out to you. Are you okay? They can call other people. And that's kind of why I thought this was lame at first, because the Apple Watch itself can do that. But what Lively is doing through their live agent assist feature is not just for falls. If you have a problem with your car and you don't have AAA and you don't know who to call, you can just use the app on your Apple Watch and contact a Lively rep. So it's for more than that. Maybe heart attack, maybe some other emergency, or, you know, think of it like, I guess, like OnStar for people in a sense. I don't know what the cost of the service plan is, but you know, you are getting a benefit of a hardware subsidy on your Apple Watch if you do this.
Got it. So what I think is nice here is there's a whole cluster of people who like learning about tech from a person, maybe less so in the pandemic. But Best Buy has the ability to really reach a mainstream audience and explain something that may not be explicable to everybody otherwise. Mm-hmm. So I look at this as like a marketing and sales channel kind of thing.
Yeah.
All right. This next product coming out, I was kind of like, do we really want to cover it? Is it really IoT? And Kevin, you made a compelling case. So let's talk about the Sonos Roam.
Right. So Sonos has a new portable speaker. It is a Bluetooth speaker called the Roam. It costs $169. It actually does have Wi-Fi as well. They say all-day battery life, although I don't know if that's true or not. 10 hours is what they're saying on a charge. And I know why you were like, do we want to cover this? You know, because it's just another Sonos speaker. But because it is connected or can connect to your phone, I thought of at least two IoT type situations where I might be in. One specifically, when I sit out on my deck out back, I actually bring a Sonos speaker out there. I plug it in, I wait for it to connect to Wi-Fi, and then I can do my voice control, listen to my music, turn lights on and off, and so on. With this Sonos Roam, you can do the same thing, and I wouldn't have to plug it in or anything. I just take it outside, and I can connect to my smart home, etc. But I could also do that if I'm out, say, at a park, and I have cellular coverage. I've got my phone with me because that's how the music would be piped over to the Sonos. But you still have Madam A and Google built in, which would go through your phone. So you could, if somebody rings your doorbell, for example, you would be notified and you could open the door or do whatever you need to do. No Siri for this. It's Apple AirPlay 2 compatible. So if you're HomeKit, that really doesn't help you too much. But for Madam A and Google, it does.
Okay. Although, and here's what I've always hated about Bluetooth speakers is it's going to interrupt your music when you get the notification.
I guess it would. Wouldn't I want that?
Well, that's, I mean, I don't, but you do. So yes.
I mean, I'm sure you could set it up to not get those notifications if you don't want.
Oh, well, look at you. Okay. In other new product news, this is for the folks who care about clean air in their homes. AirThings has launched a new $299 device for detecting indoor air quality. It does the usual temperature, humidity, carbon dioxide, chemicals, and particulate matter. So this, the PM, particulate matter, is a new element here. And this is, particulate matter is things like dust, pollen. I have a fireplace we use all the time. So the particulate matter coming from my fireplace or wildfires. So this is important. And I actually, during wildfire season, my existing air quality monitors was still like, this is not great air quality, but now it can be more accurate and tell me how exactly it is not great. So this is going to be available to you. And yeah.
New notification. You're going to die sooner.
This is going to prompt you to get cancer earlier. Thanks. Thanks, AirThings. If you're down for better air quality, this is something to check out. All right. Now, Kevin, you have been playing with the device, and I don't recall hearing you so enthusiastic about something since, like, the original Wyze Gear, and that was because it was cheap.
I love this thing. That's all I'm going to say. That's the whole review.
We should tell people what it is.
Okay. So, as we've mentioned in a couple weeks ago, I'm kind of moving away from Google Home and I'm trying HomeKit. So Logitech was kind enough to send us a review unit of their $200 Circle View doorbell, which does support HomeKit secure video. And that's important because really there's only four HomeKit approved doorbells right now, and only two of those actually support at the present time HomeKit secure video. That's the encrypted video that uses your iCloud storage. And I'm not going to name names, but no police departments are going to be able to see that video. So again, I love this thing. Let me tell you why. It is so easy to install. I cannot get over it. Every single device maker should take a lesson from how HomeKit works, because I literally unpackaged the doorbell, plugged it into a micro USB power source, tapped my iPhone to it, just like you would say for a HomePod, and the little setup screen starts right within iOS. I didn't have to set up Wi-Fi or do anything, just literally had to say, what's the name of the doorbell? Where's it going to be? Set up a couple simple configurations, like, recording. Do I want to record all the time? Do I just want to stream? Who has access? And that was it. Then I literally took it outside, and where I had already pre-wired the base to my two doorbell wires, attached it to the base, and that was it. Up and running, done. Got a firmware update while connected to micro USB. I wasn't prompted for it. It just did it. Amazing. The Wi-Fi setup process can be so painful on these devices, and this really isn't. Although, it works with 2.4 gigahertz, so you do have to deal with that if you have a mesh network. And I've done that with my Eero by setting it up to shut off the 5 gigahertz for 15 minutes. So that's that. We'll get into that some other time because that's really becoming a pain point. Other than that, everything is done right within the home app. That's where you view the camera footage. That's where you can interact with people with two-way voice. There's no Logitech app, and that removes such a huge point of friction. It's just in the home app. It's natively integrated.
And I remember all the way back in, I went to New York and actually visited an Apple. Apple had set up a home, and we were talking about HomeKit very early on. And I was really stunned by this concept because most device makers at the time were still like, no, we want you to download our app. And a lot of them focused on, you know, the ease of use that you're talking about, but then they also wanted people to download the app, and they were thinking of things that they could add to their app to get people to download it, you know, later. I think this is a really tough approach because a lot of people were like, oh, I don't know if I really want to work with Apple because I don't want to give up, you know, getting the user information from my device. So this is a real point of tension, and I don't know if we've solved it to the happiness of everyone involved.
Right. So it is a definite paradigm shift in the relationship between the device maker and the consumer. And I know that device makers may have issues with that. And it's not even all that great for the consumer in one regard. If Logitech wants to add a new feature, which they actually did, that I saw that prior reviews didn't, they go through Apple, and Apple updates the home app with those features. So there were some additional configurations that I had for motion detection and such that people who are using or reviewed it months ago didn't have. So I can understand the challenges here. Regardless, I think the benefit of the simple setup far outweighs those challenges personally. I mean, it just was easy to set up and it just worked. It's fantastic. The camera, this is interesting. Logitech took a different approach, and I'm starting to see a trend here because other new cameras are doing this, or other new video doorbells. They're doing more of a head-to-toe view from a widescreen angle, so up and down, portrait rather than landscape, so you can see the entire person that's there. And perhaps it's easier to see packages as well. So that was a little unique for me. Additionally, this too, just like the Abode and the Wyzecam 3, has night color vision. There's a 300 lux white LED bar that you can turn on, turn off. It can turn on outside when there's motion. That helps with the color, but it's not necessary. The motion detection can be set up as a separate device, so to speak, in the Apple HomeKit app. So that way you could use it to, say, when somebody walks up to the porch at night, turn on a connected porch light and really brighten it up. So there's a lot of different features in here. Again, it's a privacy-centric, privacy-focused approach. You do need at least a 200 gigabyte iCloud account, a storage account, to use a HomeKit secure video camera. And that only works with one camera. If you have more than one, but less than five, you need their 2 terabyte plan, which is $10 a month. I'm on the 200 gig for $3 a month. I'm fine with that. Interestingly, the storage that I purchased that I share with my family for their iPhones in that 200 gig, the storage from the video recordings doesn't count against it. So it's actually not a bad deal, in my opinion, because you're getting extra storage for your iOS devices. So,
oh, nice.
I mean, I haven't tested any other HomeKit secure video doorbells. There aren't too many right now, but I really, really like this thing. The one thing I'm not happy about is that the angle bracket that they include, if you want to use an angle bracket, is only like 20 degrees. So I don't get the perfect view I want because my doorbell is side mounted. So maybe there'll be an aftermarket type of bracket that I can put in later.
Or just like jam some silly putty in there.
Yeah, maybe. Real quick, it comes with a doorbell chime connector kit for people with older doorbell chimes. And I wired that up and it does work. We actually got rid of it right away because it sets our dog off. It's just so freaking loud. So instead, you can have the doorbell chime send notifications to everybody's Apple Watch and iPhone and iPad, and the HomePods in the house can actually be those chimes. So we're using those as chimes, and Norm hasn't gone crazy once for some reason. So for what that's worth, it's an option. You can use the old doorbell chime if you want, but you don't need to.
I like it. All right. Okay. Well, so HomeKit folks, this is a good doorbell. I know a lot of people get into like Homebridge and things like that because they're retrofitting their existing like Ring doorbell to HomeKit because Ring had said, yes, we're going to support HomeKit. And they never, ever did. but maybe you should just give up and check one of these out because, Kevin, you're very happy. Good Lord.
Very happy.
Okay. Well, it is that time of the show where we turn to you, our listeners, and take your calls and or DMs, as is the case here. Welcome to the Internet of Things podcast hotline. This week, the hotline is sponsored by Very. Very is a fully distributed IoT engineering firm that is helping people get their biggest projects fully operational on time and on budget. You can discover what Very's multidisciplinary teams can do for you at www.verypossible.com. And if you would like to call us and leave us a message, you can call us at 512-623-7424, and you will be entered to win the smart speaker of your choice for the month of March. So there's really no reason not to call because you'll be entered to win and you might get your question answered by us on the show. This week's question is actually sent via DM, which means I'm sorry you don't get entered into the contest, but I'm going to have Kevin read your question and then we'll answer it for you.
Frank reached out to me on Twitter and he's wondering if we have insights on an enterprise IoT system for water sensors and temperature sensors. He's the director of technology for a high school campus and he has about 8 data rooms that he wants to monitor the temperature and for water leaks. He also wants an app to go along with it. So that way, when he's off campus, he'll be notified. So he was wondering who might be a good company to check out. And since it's enterprise, I said, Stacy, who should he check out?
All right. I have answers for you, Frank. Okay. First up, it's really important to say for an enterprise solution, I think you should look for both a wired and a cellular backup just in case, depending on how valuable the equipment is in here. So that's first up. And know that you're going to be paying more for these devices. I went to a company called Swift Sensors because they have lots of options for temperature monitoring, but I couldn't find a water sensor there. So if you're dead set on having the water and leak detection, then I'm going to recommend you go to a company called My Devices. And My Devices is fun because they do everything. They have the app, they have all of this, and it's all on a LoRaWAN network that you then tie into a Wi-Fi or a cellular base station. So what you're going to end up with is a gateway device, a service plan associated with the cellular backup, and an app, and a huge array of sensors. And this is great because if you want to go beyond the temperature sensors and the water sensors, you could actually add like mouse traps that are connected or, you know, level detection, all kinds of crazy things.
Waste basket
sensors. Like it would be crazy expensive, but if you wanted to stick these things in the bathrooms to detect when their waste baskets are full, you totally could. So My Devices, it's unclear. They have many options. They don't have as many water sensor options. But when you go on the site, you're going to find the list of sensors will tell you what region it's available in. So you're going to want to pay attention to that because it'll be like, is it FCC or Ofcom certified? So that kind of thing. For you, I chose the Netvox water rope. This is a sensor with a 300 meter rope that has a water detection wire and it will send a leak notification within 10 seconds. So that felt really good. On the temperature side, oh, and those are $249 a piece. Enterprise stuff does cost way more than consumer stuff.
They have one that's shorter. They just have a Netvox indoor water leak sensor that doesn't have 300 feet, and it's $50. So depending on the need,
yes,
you might be able to get away with it cheaper.
I just feel like depending on how much gear you have, you may want to.
You just like the rope leak detector. That's pretty wild.
Well, because it covers so much more surface area.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you have
a
leak, that's important.
I agree.
So, yeah, there's tons of so many options. So I would say just go check out the My Devices site. You can try Swift Sensors. Comcast has a division called MachineQ that also does LoRaWAN and has a curated list of sensors and an app. A lot of other kind of LoRa sensor kind of places, they don't have a good app experience. I've actually tried the My Devices setup and app, and it's my favorite. So that's why I'm recommending that for you. All right, Frank, I hope this helps you. And, you know, let us know if it does. Remember, if you would like to be on the show, give us a call at 512-623-7424, and we will answer your questions. And you'll be entered to win a $99 smart speaker. All right, that concludes this portion of the show. Please stay tuned for our interview with Julie Setzer, who is VP of R&D at P&G Ventures. She's going to be talking to us about what she's looking for in startups coming with technology and cool stuff for the consumer product space. And she's going to talk about where P&G thinks technology can help develop new products. We don't have a sponsor in the middle segment of the show this week, but if you would like to sponsor the IoT podcast, we have openings. So you can email Andrew at stacyonIoT.com and get a media kit. Stay tuned. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Internet of Things podcast. This is your host, Stacey Higginbotham, and today's guest is Julie Setzer, who is the Senior VP of R&D at P&G Ventures. Hello, Julie. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
All right. Well, I have been super excited to have you on the show. It's been a long time since we've heard from anyone at P&G. And so I figure we all know what Procter & Gamble does. But why don't you talk to us a little bit about your role at P&G Ventures?
Sure. So P&G Ventures is really a corporate startup studio, an early stage startup studio within P&G. And we're, our mission is to create new brands and new categories where we don't currently play as the Procter & Gamble company, or they may not even exist. So we're trying to solve big consumer problems that are kind of outside of our normal business organization, but that are really meaningful for consumers.
And do y'all focus on various different categories? P&G obviously has a wide number of brands and interests ranging from like toilet paper to medicine.
You got it. So we're really focused on, as I said, categories that we believe will be new categories in the future or new to P&G, where we think we can grow them because the consumer needs are really evolving and there's problems that haven't been solved. So some of the areas where we're particularly focused, for example, is active aging. The rate at which the population is aging is quite rapid and people are living longer and their desire is to live more independently, to live safe in their own home for as long as possible and be as independent as possible and have the richest possible lifestyle as they age. So that's an area where we believe there's lots of big new consumer problems to solve. You know, we continue obviously to be very focused on the home, and people are spending more and more time in their home these days, and needs in the home are evolving as well. So, for example, there's a huge shift towards urbanization, which is going to change the type of consumer products that are important. And with COVID, I think obviously people are becoming even more aware of the importance of a healthy hygiene within their home. So those are some of the areas that we're particularly focused on right now in P&G Ventures.
Got it. Yes. I feel like we're all very focused on COVID for sure. And then in the smart home where we have lots of people talking to us, they're very focused on aging in place. So let's actually get started with kind of a macro perspective, because it's been almost a decade and a half since the smartphone came out. And I would love to get your perspective on how that has changed how P&G even views the role of technology in the home.
You know, the way I see it, and I think the way we see it in P&G Ventures is that, you know, at the core of all of our innovation is going to be a consumer product, but the connected devices, sensors, and smartphones can all be part of enhancing the experience and solving the problem. So that's everything from the wellness products where, you know, we're looking at how can we connect some of these things to telemedicine as a way to enhance the overall experience. In the hygiene area, you know, using your smart device, basically to give you feedback on whether or not your cleaning products are working for you and what you need to be doing potentially differently to get the results you want. The Opte beauty device is very much intended to be a smart product. So we see that very much as we're trying to create those integrated digital and physical product experiences for people.
Let's go to this idea of active aging. There's so much potential here, and there's also so many areas where technology is offering solutions, but people really just don't seem to want it because they're either concerned about privacy, maybe they're concerned because it's too complicated. So when you're looking at projects for active aging, as you called it, what does your rubric look like? What are the things that you think make sense for meeting people where they're at?
You know, we're a fast-moving consumer goods company. So where we're really trying to focus on is things that help people maintain or enhance their wellness, right? So how can we sort of make it simpler, more intuitive, and more integrated into their lifestyle to manage their own health and wellness and address some of the problems that emerge as you age? We have active projects, for example, in the menopause space. We recently launched a line of products in a joint venture with another company that addresses women's needs as in menopause and particularly challenges that they have with dryness. You know, it turns out that incontinence is a pretty big problem and can interrupt people's lives. And so there's quite a few things that we believe we can do in the incontinence space. So it's really about giving consumers products they can use every day that help them manage some of the big problems and have a healthier lifestyle that they can manage on their own and independently.
Awesome. So what kind of innovations in the technology world, maybe it's smartphones, maybe it's sensors, that have helped make these innovations more personal or maybe even more accessible to more people outside of like a medical setting?
Sure. I think that's very important. For example, one of the simple things we're doing is we are doing more of our innovations, starting with a direct-to-consumer business model. And what that allows us to do is create more engagement with the consumer. So create more community, create more blogs and resources, digital resources that they can use to help solve their problems. So if you think about women in menopause, that's a problem that nobody talks about, right? So creating a community where women can talk, where they can have access to resources and experts that can help them, that's as important or potentially more important than the products we can offer. And we want to bring those things together, again, as a very holistic solution for our consumers.
I like the holistic approach. And P&G has put out quite a few smart products. I'm thinking Oral-B has a connected toothbrush. I feel like we actually talked to people about the Febreze air diffuser. There's even some really cool things happening on the makeup side. So is there anything that you've learned from those products that you're trying to take into future developed products?
Well, one of the most important things we've learned is that, you know, the consumer's not going to connect the product unless, you know, that enhancement of our product to become a smart product actually creates really meaningful value for him or her. So we certainly have learned that with our in our toothbrush area, where we can offer some really enhanced benefits. But a consumer actually needs to go through that activation energy of setting up that engagement. And it's not, consumer has a lot of demands on his or her time, has a lot of different devices in her life, and that may or may not be something she's willing to do unless it really adds value. For example, the beauty device in the beauty area, we just launched a device that, you know, it's basically precision deposition of a serum that camouflages any imperfections on your skin. Without depositing, without putting makeup all over your skin, you can basically cover up imperfections precisely. And what that does is allow sort of the natural radiance of your skin to come through. And our vision is really that this will be a smart device that will be able to engage with the consumer and help her have just a really amazing experience. Everything from how to use the product to what the benefits of the product are and how to get the best benefits. But we are in very much of a learning journey on how to create that experience for the consumer such that it's worth her time to make that connection with us and to engage with our digital material.
So in looking at some of your products, it looks like there are membership components or components tied to some of them that have an ongoing, that require an ongoing relationship with the customer. Can you talk about how the smartphone has helped enable those kind of products?
Sure. So let me use our Bodewell product as an example. This is a line of products that is really a breakthrough solution for consumers who have psoriasis or eczema. And it requires the consumer to use it consistently for about 6 weeks before, you know, the lesions are really resolved. And when you think about how a company like P&G engages with the consumer, which is typically through advertising and, you know, a product sitting on the shelf, it's very hard to encourage the kind of habit adoption that would lead to, you know, really consistent usage of the product that's needed, for example, in this case. So we're actually launching this product through a joint venture so that it can be a direct-to-consumer proposition, because we know that digital engagement with the consumer will be a big part of really encouraging the kind of daily use that's required. And this is the way we're thinking about innovation in the future, which is very similar to something like Peloton, where, you know, we create that ongoing engagement with the consumer that really nudges the habit that ultimately leads to the best possible outcome for the consumer.
So let's talk about COVID and cleaning, because we have seen so many interesting, I'm going to say announcements. I feel like some of the products have not actually hit the market yet, but around things like UV light for cleaning areas of the home. And I would love to hear what y'all are seeing.
Right. So I think you're hitting on another very important tension for consumers that we're very focused on, which is I want a very hygienic home, but I don't necessarily want to just bring more and more chemicals into my home. So that's really one of the major tensions that we believe we can crack. You know, different areas of science, for example, microbiome, might be ways to create, you know, a healthy bacterial balance in your home without blasting, you know, your home with more and more chemicals. So I think that the opportunity of continuing to innovate around how you really create healthy hygiene in the home with different types of solutions, as well as how you find ways for consumers to know what the hygiene in her home is and how the products she's using are helping or hurting creation of the kind of environment she wants in her home.
Yes, I've always thought it's better not to know what is actually in my home. But that's just me. I'm one of those, the bacteria will fight it out. Let's talk about the solutions there, because we hear a lot around, again, lighting, but there are lots of other technologies, maybe that don't have a digital component, but something along material sciences advancements or maybe chemical advancements. Can you talk about what you're seeing there in terms of ways to, I guess, attack the problem?
So you may know that we recently launched Microban. And what's different about the Microban technology is that it lasts for 24 hours. So not only does it kill the bacteria, but it helps prevent, you know, regrowth of the bacteria, which is certainly something that is very important to consumers today. But you're absolutely right. Different materials, different chemistries. You mentioned the bacteria fighting it out. That's really what I mean by the microbiome. How could we actually take more of a probiotic way? Could be a way in the future that we could actually solve some of these problems for the consumer. So you're right. I mean, I think this, we have a number of different ways in on solving the problem. And all of these are hugely in P&G's wheelhouse. And what I think is exciting is to think about how all these things could come together. Devices, chemistry, materials, light, as well as things like advisors on your smartphone that tell you whether what you've done is been effective or not.
Oh, that's interesting. Using the smartphone as a sensor to be like, hello, Was this sufficient? One of the other areas of focus that I think is really interesting is on insect protection. And we talk a lot about climate change. And one of the things that is coming as a result of that is there are ticks, there are more mosquitoes, they bring lots of disease. So I really thought that was kind of a fascinating area of research. And I'd love to hear what y'all are looking for or thinking about there.
Right. You got it. I mean, this is a space that is growing more and more relevant to consumers, and I think will continue to grow in the future. We're looking for safe and effective solutions, right? Again, the tension in this space is that people want to be sure that they're eliminating any problems that they have with mosquitoes, ticks, ants, roaches, flies, and others. But they're very concerned about the ways that are available to them today, which many of them are questionable from sort of a toxicity point of view. And so we're looking for safe and effective solutions. Those, again, are chemistries. For example, we have an essential oil-based line of insecticides, essentially, called Zevo. And the other way we believe we can tackle the problem is through traps. And we have also traps, flying insects, traps available through our Zevo line. And it's a space that there's, again, tons of innovation potential where, as you say, we want to go after on-body repellency against ticks, for example, as well as mosquitoes. We want to really tackle the problem of mosquitoes. So we've started, as I said, with a line of products called Zevos, Zevo, which is safe and effective bug-killing products. But we see this as the beginning of a very important innovation lineup.
Okay. And let's talk about how you work with the companies that bring you ideas. You're not a traditional venture arm, like we hand you money. You're much more of a studio or a partnership kind of model. Can you talk about how that might work with companies that might have interesting solutions for you?
Exactly. Let's use the Zevo example. We have basically licensed technologies from a couple of partner companies that we work very closely with. We have joint development agreements with. One is a company called Envance, who had created the sprays in our lineup. And, you know, we continue to work closely with them. They provide really the innovation on that part of our business. And we do the consumer work. We work with them. We provide the regulatory resources. So we find a way with all of our partners to marry what the partner brings in terms of their skill set, their expertise, potentially IP that they bring to us with our capabilities. So how we create the supply chain, how we create the demand, how we get really clear on what the consumer needs and what innovation is required. And many times regulatory is an element of really getting things to market. And that's another area where we can bring, you know, skills and expertise. So it's really about marrying the gifts that we have as a corporate entity with sort of the unique technologies and insights that come from our partners.
So you're looking for companies that have a unique technology, maybe in one of the focus areas. They should probably be pretty early on in their journey, it sounds like.
Yeah, we have partnered with different stages of the journey, but we love it when we can partner early on because of this idea of really the 1+1=3. So we can really help in areas that are typically challenging for entrepreneurs to invest in, like regulatory, like demand creation, like supply chain. And all of those things emerge as challenges for entrepreneurs fairly early on. So, yeah, we find that it's really usually a great connection to make those connections very early on and take those technologies and really develop them to get them to market quickly and in a big way.
And I know there are businesses that P&G used to be part of, but are no longer a part of. I assume there are some limits in the things you're looking for. So you may not want, I think P&G got out of pet foods, for example. You're probably not interested in pet technology. Is that a safe assumption to make?
Okay, that's a great question. So in general, we really focused our portfolio on businesses where product performance drives consumer choice. So we're interested in really bringing products and technologies where we can provide a much better solution for our consumers than than the alternative. So we're not interested in areas that are really commoditized, number one. And number two, we want to be able to leverage our go-to-market advantages, which is one of the reasons that we, you know, those are both reasons we got out of pet food, which really was part of getting out of all food. So we found that the channels we were in and the ability for innovation to really drive consumer choice didn't fit with kind of what we saw as our real advantages.
Got it. Okay. And the goal here is, if I bring my business idea or business to you, it's not that I would then have you as a customer, which is kind of a lot of strategic corporate venture, but it's actually that we would build a brand together that would become eventually a P&G brand?
You got it. That would be our goal.
Okay. So this is basically an idea sourcing effort for y'all.
It is. It's an idea sourcing effort. I mean, we believe innovation comes from anywhere. We believe there's a lot of people out there trying to solve the big problems that we're trying to solve. And we believe that for many of these entrepreneurs, we can be better together. We can help them have the impact that they want to have in the world through a partnership with us. And that's what we try to explore early on. Not every one of the partnerships that we explore turns out to be a match. But what we try to do is leave every one of our entrepreneurs better for having engaged with us than they were before.
Excellent. All right. Well, Julie, thanks so much for coming on the show this week. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
That's it for this week. Thanks so much for listening. And remember, if you'd like more IoT news, sign up for my newsletter at stacyoniot.com. We'll see you next week.